It takes a minute to show up on Facebook. That's what I'm waiting for. All right, here we go. Alright everyone, welcome to another edition of Drummer Nation Live. We have a special show for you today. As per usual, I have my trusty erstwhile genius co-pilot, Adam Nussbaum. You can't be arguing that I called
easy
him a co-pilot.
Now, easy now.
And a special guest today, Mr. Rob Cook, who you see in the center. And we had to work around some difficulties with audio, but we got him. Welcome, Rob. There may be a little bit of a delay with this method, but, you know, there's always something wrong with these things, and we do the best we can. Anyway, Rob Cook, if you don't know, is the originator, founder, force majeure behind the Chicago Drum Show, which is the granddaddy, I think, of them all. How long has that been going on, Rob?
This will be the 32nd show this year.
32nd show. So I'll give you a little of my experience. When I had Boss for Cymbals, I was running that. I went to this show and said, I'm in. I'll do every one of them because it was an easy show. It was a fun show. It was a stone cold groove, man. There are industry people there and drummers, pro drummers, kid drummers, all drummers of every stripe, collectors, players. There are lots of people selling and buying, and there are clinics, and it's just the coolest drum hang in the world. So I don't know how you've managed to do that all these years, but thank you for that.
Yeah, well, thank you. I appreciate the kind words. I added a subtitle a couple of years ago. It's the Drummer's Family Reunion, and I crunched some numbers this morning because that question has come up before and I didn't have an answer, but I tried to break down how many people have been coming for how long and so on, and we've got kind of a core group there. Altogether, we've got 128 exhibitors this year, and they're filling about 190 spaces because some of them have multiple spaces, and there are at least 30 that have been there for 20 years or more, and there are half a dozen that have been to all but one, so that's, you know, 30 shows. We've got about 20 new exhibitors this year, so, and overall, we're a little short of the overall record number of exhibitors and spaces, but only by about half a dozen or so. So it's a pretty eclectic group with a fair amount of turnover, but with a core. And like you say, the key is the vibe. I've always felt if I can keep the exhibitors happy, everything else will fall into place. And I try to treat the exhibitors the way I would want to be treated at a show, and not get a runaround about getting checked in or getting freight there or, you know, getting passes picked up and so on. And usually when a new exhibitor calls and I can tell he's one of the good guys, I can confidently say, hey, within about half an hour, you're going to feel like you've been coming for 10 years. Because it's like going to a baseball game where everybody's in a good mood, you know. It's a real fraternity in a lot of ways.
Are there going to be hot dogs and Cracker Jacks there?
No. about 6 or 7 years old. He started with a box of water and a box of candy bars. And we worked out a deal where I'd help him with infrastructure every year if he'd help me with setup, but otherwise it was an independent business. And by the time he was a senior in high school, he had a popcorn machine and he was selling sloppy joes and hot dogs, and and he was making $1,000 by the time he was a senior in high school. But the kitchen is no longer available to us at Kane County, so we're down to just water and so on. Last year, the guys with Trip and several other companies that helped out the Made in Chicago drum project, and they gave away free food, burgers and so on, that they grilled out on the front. And they're going to do that with drinks this year. Hinsenberg and Made in Chicago Project have 4 booths side by side, and they're going to provide free water and coffee and so on for refreshments.
You heard me say it was an easy show. That's what you were alluding to there. You know, those of us who were used to going to PASIC or NAMM, they're just major pain in the butts to get in and out of. But your show was a breeze, and everybody feels like family. Now, one thing I want to point out is I was not into this whole game, this whole vintage drums and all that until I got there. And somebody says, look, I found it. I got it. And what is it? Well, it's a pedal from it's a spring from a 68 Speed King or, you know, something that just looks like junk to somebody else. And these guys thrilled, and you start to get involved, man. It brings you in. And you know, I don't know a lot of drummers like me, but I never paid any attention to that stuff. I didn't look at, you know, one time I was at your show and I was hanging with Ron Dinette and Stanton, and they were working on the details of the new snare drum they were coming out with, the Spirit of New Orleans. And they're talking about the badges and the edges and the rims, you know, the hoops. Are they single or double or triple flanged? And are they steel? Are they die cast? And what kind of lug casings? And are they the classic? You know, I never paid any attention to that till I got to your show, and now I'm hooked on it.
Yeah,
so I blame you.
I usually explain it as a place where the equipment nerds can come and talk to other people with the, you know, with common interest. There, it's the one place where a guy can go and start talking about the thread size of a 50s versus late 50s certain model, and right, and the eyes glaze over. You know, there's no one at home that's going to listen to him right, get into that kind of detail, and especially right, share their excitement about it. Yeah.
Well, let me ask you this, because I think of the older drummers, there's a certain mentality that none of that stuff mattered, that all they cared about was cymbals. And I'm going to play an example of an artist talk. It's less than a minute. But I have these interviews for like 300 of them. I've been putting out shorts, like a minute or less of quips and things guys said. And not to say one person's right or wrong. Last week we did one on clicks, and we had Danny Serafin, who hates the click, basically, and we had Harvey Mason, who loves the click, basically. They're both right, okay? So I want to show you this thing from Bill Goodwin about his take on these things.
Well, when I was very young, well, pretty young, I was already playing professionally, but I went to see one of my all-time favorite drummers and meet him for the first time, and that was Roy Haynes. And Roy was playing at Shelly Man's Club, which is a wonderful club in Hollywood, Shelly's Manhole. Mm-hmm. And after the set, I went up and introduced myself, and Roy was very nice and affable. And I said, "Gee, Roy, it's so great to meet you, and you're, you know, one of my favorite drummers, blah, blah, blah. And what kind of drums do you like?" You know, I knew that it was a jive question, because I knew he played Slingerland drums. But, you know, I read Downbeat, and I saw the ads. So he points to the drums, and I think it was a set of Slingerland drums. He says, "You know, I've just met you, and you're a young guy, but that's, you know, I'm not going to give you a hard time, but that's a really stupid question. Look at this drum set. Does it look any different than any other drum set?" I said, "No, it looks just like," he said, "they're all the same, man. The sound is in you."
Anyway, I don't post that to say that he's wrong. I just, was there always this interest, do you think? I mean, you've been at this for 30-something years. It seems like there's a lot more interest in this stuff now than there used to be.
there's new interest. There's a whole new generation. There's a lot of young kids. And I used to hear 20 years ago, what are you going to do? Most of us are in our 50s and 60s now. What are you going to do? We're going to be dying out. I guess the show's going to die out. But it's really quite amazing that there's a new generation of drum shops out there, a new generation of drummers and so on. And they're kind of rediscovering some of the same things that, you know, the generation before them discovered. And as far as, you know, the musicians are not all gear nuts. And what was going through my mind as I saw your clip was one of the best examples of that difference is the Beatles. I mean, people have written volumes about every smallest detail. And if you read, I read an interview with Paul McCartney once, and someone asked him what strings he uses, and he said the long, shiny ones. And Ringo, Gary Astridge, Ringo's gear archivist, knows much more about Ringo's gear than Ringo ever knew. Mm-hmm. And Ringo is grateful to have Gary getting all this together and archiving it and organizing it. And he's made a cottage industry out of going to shows and talking about Ringo's gear. And he's even has a range of products now, posters showing the kits from different years and everything. But he's gone through all of Ringo's gear from the different eras, and they've all been cleaned up and missing parts replaced and cased into, you know, big flight cases and so on. And it's been a wonderful thing, but Ringo never would have had the interest to do all that on its own. But you can't argue with his musicianship.
No, of course not. Yeah, that was kind of my point, that there's more interest in the vintage drums now than maybe when they were made.
And certainly it's the tuck more than the gear. I once sent a snare drum to Hoboken, to a studio that Lenny Kravitz owned. And they had called and they wanted a 402, a 6.5x14 Superphonic. And they wanted it express. They wanted it like the next day. Mm-hmm. And that seemed like an odd request to me because those drums, even back, you know, this was 15, 20 years ago, even then they were on every corner. And I asked them what the deal was, and they were recording a group, and the drummer wanted the bottom sound. And I said, knowing that, I said, well, no harm, no foul. If this doesn't get you there, I'll ship it to you, but you're welcome to send it back if it doesn't get you there. You know, you don't have to buy the drum. Mm-hmm. And it came back. I mean, they didn't have John Bonham to play it.
Very good point. Very good point. And Adam, you've said many times, it's not the painter. It's not the brush. It's the painter.
Yeah, you know, it's you know, you hope that you're going to have a decent tool to facilitate the task at hand. But at the end of the day, it's who's in charge.
Yeah.
Or is the drum playing you, or are you playing the drum, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. When Billy Benson was playing Remo drums, he had a clinic near my home in Michigan, and I, in the Q&A section, I asked him to talk about the Remo drums, and he really didn't have much to say other than, you know, I think it's more the drummer than the drums, and he was absolutely right. I mean, they sounded great. He did a great clinic, and the drums sounded good, but they were those Acousticon shells, you know.
And who was this again?
Louis
Belson.
Oh, Louis Belson. Well, because, you know, Jeff Hamilton was my business partner, and he played those drums. And people would always say, why is Jeff playing those drums, man? Gets a great sound. I'd say, well, I think you just answered your own question.
Yeah, exactly.
So, Adam, you're going to be at the show this time? I can't come this time, but I wish I could.
I'm very excited to go, you know, my schedule finally gives me the opportunity to go out there. I know I was asked at one point to do a clinic presentation there, but unfortunately I wasn't available. But I'm just coming out as a excited spectator and going to get back to my little drum geek kind of vibe and enjoy the entire experience. The real thing for me that really motivated me to come out to this one was I'm very curious to hear the eight different cymbalsmiths do their presentations and talk about the process, because I find that this is somewhat, for me, a newer thing within the whole climate of the industry, that there's, you know, more independent people creating cymbals besides the big three or four, you know, that we know about. So even Cosmo agrees.
Cosmo is the dog. Here's the website. Let's go through. Go ahead, Rob. I'm sorry.
What were you saying, Rob? I missed that.
I was thinking about calling my dog here to see if you can see your puppy. But a development that I haven't even really announced yet or put it on the website, and that's that there's a fellow in Brazil, Francisco Domini, who has a foundry and everything. They do. He has a line of cymbals, and the alloy is cast and everything there. They do all the work. And he's a master cymbalsmith, and he has trained two of the cymbalsmiths that will be presenting at the show, Mike Mangiello and Nikki Moon. They have both traveled down to Brazil and studied with Francisco. And I got word from Mike Mangiello this last week that Francisco has managed to get a visa to attend the show. So he's going to be kind of sharing the stage with some of the guys there, and that'll add another whole dimension. We're really looking forward to having Francisco with us.
That's something I wanted to touch on, too, being a cymbal guy. That this is just an amazing lineup you have here of these people who are coming up now with cymbal brands of their own. Here's your website here, and I guess they're all on the left side here, right? Meet the Smiths program, Eric Binder, Ray Byrne, Dave Collingwood, Burke Daugherty, the beloved Paul Francis, good friend of mine, Mike, there's your buddy there, Mike Mangiello, did I say it right? No, Mangiello, Nikki Moon, Matt Nolan, I know, and Timothy Roberts. That proves to be a very interesting and exciting presentation, I would think.
Yeah, the thing grew legs of its own, actually. I invited these eight guys, and I was hoping that two or three of them would come and we could have a little round table around a conference table. And all eight of them confirmed, and seven of them reserved exhibit spaces. So then I thought, well, it's a bigger event than I had figured on, so we have to reformat it a little bit. So we added not only the clinic stage presentation, but also Steve Maxwell has been kind enough to host a get-together, a meet-and-greet, and all eight of them plus Francisco will be together in the conference room above the exhibit area, and Steve is going to provide light refreshments and so on. So it'd be a great time to meet all eight of them at once, plus the master, Francisco. So the whole event kind of grew legs of its own, and kind of like the drum show. I'm kind of the caretaker, and I guide it, but...
Well, the cymbal presentation, though, if I could jump in, I know there's a delay. The cymbal presentation, though, reminds me of this, the hippest thing for cymbals since Jim Pettit's Cymbal Summit. Remember that?
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't, but I remember reading about it. That was quite an event.
He had like six or eight cymbal manufacturers there, and they all did presentations, and it was fabulous. But, you know, I'm a cymbal guy. I sure wish I could be at this one, but... will I be able to see any of these on video after the fact, or not really, right?
Yeah. Steve Maxwell Jr. is going to be kind of a master of ceremonies. He's going to guide the Smiths through their presentations, or you know, just turn them loose if they want to go on their own, but otherwise he'll have some bullet points to cover with each, and he'll be recording all of that for the Maxwell podcast.
Oh,
So,
good, good, good.
yeah, this should all be online.
Now, what do you guys think is, I would think this is a positive thing for the industry, wouldn't you guys?
What was that?
I'm sorry, there is a delay because of this system we're doing, but I would say that this is a positive thing. I mean, the big companies might not think so, but for the cymbal industry, for the cymbals drummer, for drummers who play cymbals, this has got to be a good thing.
Oh, yeah.
The fact that all these people are into the industry now, and there's all these little startups, and I wish them all luck. It's really tough to build a national brand, but I'm not sure they all want to. You know, I talked to Paul about that because he's a cymbal master. You know, I mean, he was a Zildjian for decades.
And business MO differs quite a bit. That's why I wanted to get this eclectic group, because some of them, it's just between them and each symbol that they make, and it doesn't seem to go much further.
Right.
They share a passion in communicating with bronze and making this piece of bronze into a symbol. And every single one of them has discovered that they can ruin a symbol by inappropriate hammering, overhammering, or underhammering, or misplaced hammering. And that's what seems to intrigue them, is how they can draw the thing, the life out of the piece of bronze without killing it.
That's a good way to describe it. You know, it's one thing to say in terms of sound. You put a stick on a cymbal and you got a master there, and you say, well, I'd like to have a little more stick definition, or a little more wash, I'd like the bell to do this or that. But it's another thing to say, we need to use a bigger peen, and we need to hit it at more of an angle, and needs a little more thinning out towards the edge, and I think the bell should be hammered underneath. You know, all those things, man, do something to the sound of the cymbal. And it's not willy-nilly for those guys, you know. They're dealing with artists, and the guy says, I want this, and they know how to do it. And as somebody who's hammered cymbals, that's not an easy thing to do.
Eric Binder starts the day out on Saturday just before the Smiths come on for the rest of the day. And his clinic is going to focus on how to talk to your cymbal smith, how to describe those terms that you were just using, you know, a roar, a wash, you know, and try to get some of the nomenclature straight, so that the people that are new to this whole world of describing cymbal sounds and creating cymbal sounds can more easily communicate with the guys that are going to be on.
That's a very good point. I asked the guys in Istanbul, how do you know when it's done? You know, and they said, well, that's the master. Because, you know, you can screw it up too, just by continuing to hammer. Well, that sounds fascinating. And then there's also a bunch
That's what's pretty neat. Because I want to learn, you know, every chance I get to hear somebody that's good at what they do, it gives me an opportunity to learn something. So I'm fascinated by symbols. I always have been. I'm very symbol-minded. So I'm excited about this, as well as, you know, seeing a lot of old friends and colleagues from over the years. I'm really looking forward to being out there, Rob. So yeah, absolutely.
It is a stone groove. Bunny Carlos is always there, and he's got, I don't know, sometimes he'll have some friends over to his barn out in Rockford, and that's just an amazing thing. But just the hang is wonderful. And I know you're back in Kane County now. I always like that spot.
It's not ideally suited for this kind of production, but it's a unique facility that the people really prefer. We For a few years, we were in a more structured corporate type convention facility, and it was nice to have a lift truck and shipping to the show and so on, but it didn't have the vibe. So we're back at the fairgrounds, and people like it there.
It feels like home there. It really does. Well, let me punch up while we're on here. Let's look on your website. The clinicians are on the right-hand side. You've got Bobby T, Scott Pellegrom, Jerry Brown, Randy Antone, Jeff Davenport, Gary Astridge, the aforementioned Ringo curator, Paul Wertico, great guy. A lot of these guys have done my show, Les DeMerle. And that's quite a lineup too. And then here you see there's the schedule. This is all at rebeats.com, by the way. R-E-B-E-A-T-S. And he's got everything here. When I've been in this way, I mean, see, makes it easy. You know, where to stay, the frequently asked questions, all that stuff. Just a stone cold groove. But I also want to show something else, which is, see if I can find it here. This is a walkthrough. Somebody did a few last year. Let me find it. Oh, come on. I'm looking for it. Sorry, I'm in the wrong spot altogether. Let me just get out of that and go back to... You want me out? There we go. Sorry. The switching can drive you nuts sometimes if you're trying to do it by yourself. Anyway, there's a video. There are videos out there for walkthroughs for the show, so people can get a good idea of what they're seeing. But, I mean, there's new stuff, new brands, old brands, artists, a lot of industry people, which I kind of dig, and just the coolest hang in the world. And the other thing I wanted to mention is, how much is this thing, man? Is it $100 a day? No. Is it $50 a day? No. How much is it?
Yeah, $20.
$20. And you just can't go wrong, man. I mean, the coolest hang you can do. Adam, what you got?
I'm excited. I'm looking forward to it. You know, I was recently down in Nashville, and what was fun for me was to go to drum shops. I was able to go to Forks. I was able to go to Nelson's. I was able to go to Drums Supply. And that's something which is progressively becoming rarer and rarer for me, to be able to go to a shop that is only drums, and where you go in there and you have people who are knowledgeable, know about the whole thing. And it was great for me because when I was at Forks, I met some other wonderful drummers, and we all, you know, we're all swimming in the same big pool, but in different lanes, you know. Being in Nashville, I met some guys that I'd heard about, but I never had a chance to meet. And the whole thing about being able to be amongst people in that community is just a good feeling. It's all part of the community that is something that I treasure. I mean, I remember being a kid and going to Frank Ippolito's in New York City, and you'd look over your shoulder and you'd see this old guy scowling at people, and it was like, who's that guy? Oh, that's Joe Jones. What? Who? You mean, yeah, that Joe Jones. And I mean, and just cats would show up, and the hang was great. I mean, I saw the same thing when I was at a Pro Drum Shop in Hollywood. It was great. It just made me feel so good, and gave me that exciting feeling that I had when I was a youngster, you know, when you'd look at the catalogs, or then you'd go, and I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be fun.
You know, there's been a kind of a resurgence, I think, even nationwide, maintain, of drum shop, a lot of new shops. I mean, like some of the ones you mentioned, of course, Forks has been around for a while, but Nelson's is fairly new.
Right.
And a big resurgence in Chicago, big time. There's not only Steve Maxwell's shop, which is an absolute dream for an equipment geek, mm-hmm. either new or vintage, but also there's a Vic's Drum Shop. That's now run by John Maloney, and it's not in the original location where Vic Salazar had started the shop. But Vic's Drum Shop is very much in business and an active going concern. We've got Mike's Drum Shop and Drugan's. Brian and Johnny Drugan have a fantastic operation going.
These are all in Chicago?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
Or Chicagoland. None of them are right downtown. So it needs a little driving around. But man, between Maxwell, Drugan's, Vic's, and Mike's, they're back, you know.
Well, you know, I'm really happy to see that, because before I sold my company to Sabian, one of the problems I was having was dealers were going out of business faster than we could add new dealers. And I think that's bottomed out, and now it's on the upswing again, to your point, both of your points, which is a good thing. Now, also, you've done interviews over the years with people at those shows. Are they available anywhere, or is that just archival?
Yeah, pretty much archival. There are some few YouTube videos, I believe. But yeah, I've got a lot of content that I can rework and release in various formats. I'll need to start digging through some of the archives and try to get some of that out.
Well, here's a walkthrough. Let's look at this for a second. This is called Chicago Drum Show 2022 Walkthrough. I don't know who did it, but I found it on YouTube. And this will give you a great idea of what it's all about. I mean, is this kid in a candy store or what? You see what I mean, folks? If you're a drummer and you can't find anything here of interest, you need another hobby. And the other thing is, these guys know. Like, they can say, no, that's not an original paint in the inside of that Gretsch 12-inch snare drum from, 12-inch tom-tom from 1972. They know that stuff. Well, I'm not going to let this go on and on. There's AF. Interesting stuff all the way around. Used, new, little bits and pieces. Some people have just bins of parts, stuff nobody can find.
What
Whoops,
if you could
let's
get
out of that.
Calculations?
I hate the commercials. Why do they do
and
that?
And real-time glucose readings.
Get out.
It's all over the map. Some people just bring big boxes of parts and let people dig through, and it's kind of disorganized. Others have it all categorized and laid out and identified by model and so on. But generally, if you're looking for something specific in either a part or accessory or stand or drum, if you don't find it at the show, you'll at least find the people who know what you're looking for and can guide you and tell you where you can probably find it.
Now, some of these things change hand two or three times over the weekend. You have a special deal, right, for guys to get in early?
Yeah. The VIP pass at $100 gives the holder admission during the times that otherwise are for exhibitors only. Mm-hmm. So we start set up at noon on Friday and go to 5 p.m. So it's for exhibitors and VIP only. And generally, that's the real hardcore guys and buyers. So usually the Japanese, since they're coming from halfway around the world, it'd be foolish not to pick up a VIP pass because they come loaded for bear and a pocket full of cash.
I have to let the dog out. Excuse me.
Oh, sure. Go
ahead. Who let the dogs out? All right, Rob. He'll be back in just a second. I just wanted to reemphasize how
he's coming back, and there's some English buyers also, a number of people from the UK coming in, but so most of them do pick up the VIP pass. Also, over the weekend, we open at 8 in the morning for exhibitors and VIPs, and then open to the public at 10. So the $20 wristband will get you in at 10 a.m., and then the clinics start about 10:30. And they're in a separate building. It's about 100 yards away.
Okay,
so it's
going to
be a little bit more back and forth. Hopefully the weather will be good for that.
Now, I have been so many times. I'm sorry. I'm really sorry I'm missing this one. But Rob Cook is going to continue with these. But let me ask you also about books. You are an author of a lot of drum books, right? Tell us some of those titles.
The big news from Rebeats Publications is an association Well, a couple of associations. One is with Hudson Music, really nice folks there that have made e-versions of a number of the Rebeats titles. But also we're associated with Ingram, and Ingram is a producer of print-on-demand books, as well as one of the world's largest distributor of books. They deal only with resellers, bookstores and music stores and so on. But what we've been able to do with them in their print-on-demand program is save a number of titles that otherwise would have gone out of print, like Frank's For the Memories and Ed Shaughnessy's memoir, Hal Blaine's life story, Jerry Shirley from Humble Pie, his biography. These books, to print in the conventional manner, you really have to print 1,000 to make it economically feasible. But so when we get down to the last 20 or 30 copies, then it's crunch time. You got to decide, is this book just going to go out of print, or is it worth reprinting? So the Leedy Drum Topics is a new one. Drum Colors is another one that just has been re-released. And the nice thing, other than making it economically feasible, is Ingram has facilities around the world. And now all of these titles, I've got about 13 titles now that are available through the Ingram channel, and I'm working on several more. But all of those titles are available in the European Union countries and in Great Britain and Australia, and something like the Leedy Drum Topics, that's a 4-pound book. If you take it to the post office to ship to England, it's going to cost you $65 shipping. Mm-hmm. But now it's available on Amazon in Great Britain. And when you order it through Amazon, it's the same as if it's being produced, you know, 50 miles away. Very inexpensive shipping. So it's a great way to breathe new life into some of these niche market books that otherwise, you know, may have died on the vine. I'm real happy about that.
Well, speaking of new life, I'm trying to punch up the right thing here. One of the things I loved the first year I was there was I did a driving tour with you of the sites.
Yeah.
I can't seem to get out of this. There it is, the Rebeats driving tour of Chicago's historic percussion sites. And this was fantastic. So Rob had done all this research and all these, you know, the history of drums is the history of Chicago. And,
go ahead. There was no GPS or anything then. So you had to do it the hard way with a map and notes and the camera and so on. It's pretty easy now with GPS. Anybody can put this together. But it's still an interesting trip, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, I would call this the Holy Grail. You've got it, Holy Cross Cemetery, but the Holy Grail to me of everything I saw was Gene Krupa's grave in Calumet City.
Where is this all posted? Is this on Rob's site?
Yes, sir. Yeah, it's on Rob's site.
Wow. Yeah, through the Rebeat site.
Wow.
Right. Yeah, it's on the Rebeat site. And it was just amazing, Rob, all these places. Like, if you look in the basement, that's where they developed the bass drum pedal. And, you know, the Deegan building and all this stuff. There's so much history there that Rob has done a fantastic job of documenting. We went in some of these buildings, and it was just amazing, man. So anyway, you don't want to overlook that if you're interested in this show.
Wow.
And how often do you do that, Rob?
Oh, gosh, I haven't done it again since. I think we did it 2 or 3 years in a row, mainly for the guys that had traveled quite a ways, guys from the UK and so on.
Right.
And I think we had up to 5 or 6 cars one time and radios in each car so we didn't lose anybody. And nobody had cell phones then and so on. But yeah, it's been a while since we did the guided tour version of that.
Well, that was fantastic because of all you added to it as well. And it was a group of, like you said, 15 of us or so that were out there. And, It was the day after the show closed, and we just had a great time. Just a great time. Okay, anything else anybody want to throw in here?
I'm looking forward to seeing everybody.
Oh, one product to plug and to Adam, you got to check this out. There's a pedal from a company called Drumnetics. And this guy, it's a bass drum pedal with no spring.
Working with magnets?
What's that?
Is he working with magnets?
Yeah, neodymium magnets. And actually, he's got a double pedal and a hi-hat, too. But he's actually got some stock to sell now. He was at the Nashville show last summer, and at that time, he didn't have a firm price, and they were still working on production and so on. And it's been a tough row to hoe because this guy is not only the inventor but the developer. And so he's done all the paperwork with the trademark and patents and all that, but also the nitty-gritty of how to make the things. And it's just a remarkable product. Anybody that's been around drum pedals for any length of time and changed springs and everything, it's like magic. You gotta check this pedal out. It's amazing.
What's the name again?
Drumnetics.
Cool. Right. Does anybody remember Jay Cannon's bass drum pedal? Jay Cannon had a pedal. He had taken the springs out and put rubber bands on there, and it was just barely functional, man. If you didn't let the beater come back, it didn't. So, and he would put it. What's the matter, man? It feels great to me. And I mean, it's like a whole different thing. But Jake, rest his soul, you know. We miss.
Yeah.
Almost as funny as Adam Nesbitt.
I remember seeing a pedal that had a little, I think it was called Air Logic or something. That had, instead of a spring, it compressed air in a little chamber. And that was a beautifully crafted instrument. I know. And then, you know, you think of all those different pedals. You know, the Speed King compressed the spring. You had the rotary spring, like in a watch in the Ghost. There was that pedal that they were trying for a minute with the, I think, carbon fiber or something. PDP had one, Pacific, where instead of having a spring, the footboard itself flexed.
Wow. Do you remember the Gemini pedal?
Maybe.
No, it was a pedal, I think it was made by some people in Windsor or Detroit. They were from the auto industry, and it had two beaters, and you'd hit the toe to one for one beater and heel with the other other beater.
I do remember that. Yeah.
And it had two kind of chains that were sealed. Instead of like a spring like the Ghost, it was actually like a bicycle type chain in a great big mechanism, and the thing was huge and weighed about 50 pounds, and it was expensive, and I thought, well, it's either going to be great or a forgettable collectible that's going to be worth a lot of money. So I bought two or three of them when they came out, and they had a booth at the show one year. It must have been in the mid-90s or something, and of course now it's a memory. But I finally managed to sell all three of mine, but probably should have held on to one. It's probably worth three times the money now.
This is a good example of what we're talking about. If you like these conversations, this is breakfast, lunch, and dinner at the Chicago Drum Show. No, who are you going to talk to about this stuff other than drummers? You know? And this is a whole show of people who love this stuff. So, Rob Cook, I want to personally thank you for your dedication and passion to this. And you know, a band sounds like its leader, a show goes like its leader. You know, it's the way it is because of you, and we sure appreciate that.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it.
Thanks for your devotion.
Indeed. All right, if anybody... Go ahead.
Absolutely. Well, I'm excited.
We didn't do the date. What's the date? I know it's all on the website, but tell them the date.
May 20th and 21st, and it's always the weekend between Mother's Day and Memorial Day.
There you go.
That's significant, huh?
I'll be there next year. And I'm going to let it go now. I'm going to go to my sign-off stuff. So I want to thank you both and advise everybody once again to go check out that Chicago Drum Show. You will love it. So I'm going to end with a spot. You're welcome, Rob. I'm going to end with a couple of spots, and then we'll take it out from there. Thank you, everyone. We'll see you next time on Drummer Nation Live with my co-host, Adam Nussbaum. Take care.
Aloha.
Hi, I'm Stan Kiawa. Welcome to the Professional Drum Shop. 1959, it opened up.
Here we have Buddy Rich's, the last set he ever played. Last gig he played with Mel Torme at the Palladium. I set it up for him. One of the most iconic pictures is this one, a Joe Brillo Clinic around 1963. Mr. Hal Blaine, good friends of the store for decades.
The stories that go on, I mean, if these walls could talk, holy mackerel, we'd all go to jail.
Hey everybody, how you doing? This is Bobby A, and today I wanted to tell you about how much I really love the Hudson Music digital app. Okay, now, check it out. It's an app that you can get for your device, and you can purchase books from the Hudson Music Digital Store and have them stored right on your device. The great thing about it is you always have it with you, and any content that might be video related or music related is right there at your fingertips. It's a wonderful resource.